After I looked at the titles of the songs, We Shall Behold Him, God Moves in a Mysterious Way, Eternal Love, and The Father Will Dance, it occurred to me that my sermon title was grossly out of sync. The green-eyed monster doesn't seem to fit, but I have to do it anyway. If you have ever considered that you would like to be a part of this church, please read the note in the bulletin today about our inquirers class right after the worship service. We will meet on the left side of the room about 5 minutes after the worship service has ended. And you are welcome to come, even if this is the first time you have visited, if you would like to know a little more about Congregationalism and this church in particular. Oscar Wilde, of rather dubious fame, used to tell a fable about some inexperienced young demons who practiced the arts of temptation on a monk who had chosen to live in the desert. They whispered arguments to make him doubt his religion and the existence of God. They suggested that his prayers and his austere living would all be for nothing and that he had been cheated. They passed before his eyes a vision of the Miss USA swimsuit competition. It was no use. The monk resisted every temptation they hoped might work. And then the old senior devil himself decided to show the junior devils how to succeed with a man who seemed immune to temptation. He went up to the man of God and whispered, "Have you heard the news? Your brother has been made the bishop of Alexandria." And according to the fable, that did it. A scowl of malignant jealousy clouded the serene face, and the black cord of envy strangled another victim. Some versions of the Bible have Paul say in the chapter we have been analyzing for weeks that grown-up love, agape love, is not jealous. Other versions have him say that it does not envy. But the words are very close kin. Jealousy is the fear that someone may steal our place in the world or in the heart of someone we love. Envy is our misery once we've seen it happen. There may be some basis for being jealous. There may be none at all. Jealousy needs no evidence. It distorts reality the way a telescope does. Tiny things look gigantic. The merest suspicion becomes an absolute truth. I have even been astonished to discover that some people need no other reason to be jealous of you than to see that you are happy. To go through life with a light heart and a quick smile is enough to make somebody hates you for having the happiness he or she has missed. Nature itself sets us up for this temptation because the famous statement that all of us are created equal is false in so many ways. Some babies are too long being born and are oxygen starved. Others come into the world richly nourished all the way and are healthy from the start. Our individual genetic codes have no interest in equality. One of us gets a high energy level, along with beauty of face and form, that will open doors easily for us all our lives, and another is cheated of all three. And as soon as these disparities are apparent, jealousy has all the soil it needs to grow. And if weaknesses and strengths of birth are not enough, society bombards us day and night by temptations to envy and jealousy. Newspaper ads, store windows, TV and radio, all incessantly screaming, "Get this, you deserve it. How can you possibly know the highest joys in life without driving a new Lexus like your neighbor?" We're generally unwilling to find it, but there is a way to manage those temptations. Most of us, if we choose deliberately to do this, can always look around at the hosts of the less fortunate and be filled with gratitude to be as lucky as we are. There are hundreds of millions of people who never even think of owning a Lexus. They'd be thrilled to death with my Honda. When I remember them, I'm pleased with my car and I count my blessings. But for some reason, we spend a great deal more time looking up at someone a step above us who seems not to have our share of merit, not as deserving as we are, but who has somehow managed to get a better job or a brighter name, and we are miserable. I read a case story recently in which a psychologist was recalling a young actress patient of his who was extremely competitive and self-centered. She often had mild depression and came in for help, but one day she arrived ecstatic. She had been offered a choice part in a play which she felt would launch her career. But the very next day she came back despondent, explaining that she had read in the morning paper how a friend of hers had just gotten a part in an important movie. The doctor wondered how that fact could rob her of yesterday's joy in her own good luck until she explained it to him. She said, "Don't you understand? In order for me to be happy, it is not enough that I succeed. I have to be better off than my friends." Not many people would be quite that blunt, but she has relatives here and there who secretly feel that way. Miriam, for instance, the sister of Moses, who began fuming one day about how her brother had married a woman who was a foreigner, but who hardly had the words out of her mouth before the real reason for her anger showed up. You know, we have, for many of the things we do, a good reason and a real reason. The good reason washes well and hangs attractively on the line in public. It's the one we use. The real reason we keep to ourselves, if we can, because it's not nearly so much to our credit. Miriam's real reason comes out when she says about her brother, "Has the Lord only spoken through him? Has he not spoken through me as well?" She was jealous because her brother was getting more than his share of attention. She could have sat, I think, as a model, for Aeschylus, the Greek playwright, who said in a famous moment, "Few are they who have such inborn grace as to look up with love and envy not when another stands on the height of good fortune." One of the most dramatic stories of jealousy in the entire Bible is that of Saul, who brought a handsome young man by the name of David into his court to play music when Saul was depressed. Everything was fine until David began to win some military battles and the hearts of the people. And then Saul, eaten up with jealousy, turned psychotic. He threw a spear at David 3 times in his mad fits, and once at his own son Jonathan for daring to be David's friend. It's almost as if people in a severely jealous state really are possessed, out of control, embarrassed perhaps at what they do, but unable to do otherwise. Almost as if jealousy were a sadistic monster that played with them before it destroyed them. Which is exactly how Shakespeare saw it when he described jealousy in the phrase that gave me the title for these comments. He wrote a play called Othello about a great general of unparalleled courage, dignified in manner, poetic, richly poetic in speech, but naive as he could be about wicked and crafty people, and with no more skill than a child in dealing with jealousy once it was aroused in him. A villainous man by the name of Iago sets out to make him jealous. And at one point, as Iago watches his poison take effect horribly, he says to Othello, "Beware, my lord, of jealousy. It is the green-eyed monster which doth mock the meat it feeds on." That sentence is usually misunderstood nowadays, which means we miss much of the power of Shakespeare's image. I saw a story about jealousy the other day in a religious magazine under the title "Love and the Green Monster: A Mistake with a History I Think We Can Probably Trace." The author had half remembered Shakespeare's comment that jealousy is a green-eyed monster, and he knew our modern saying that people sometimes turn green with envy, and so he had fused the two until they came out halfway between our proverb and Shakespeare's image. But the mistake caused him to miss the real horror of Iago's warning about jealousy. When I would ask a class, what is the green-eyed monster in that line, they would almost invariably say, it's jealousy. Jealousy is the green-eyed monster. But Shakespeare is not saying that jealousy is jealousy. He's identifying jealousy with something else, with a green-eyed monster of some sort, whose habit it is to mock or play with the meat it feeds on. And as I told some of you years ago, one fall afternoon, one warm and lovely October day in Oklahoma City, I saw exactly what Shakespeare was describing, and I will not ever forget it. I was on the roof of my father-in-law's house repairing some shingles, trying to make some repayment for hospitality shown to me, and especially for all the food I had eaten. And as I worked downward from the peak of the roof, I began more and more to overlook the backyard. And all of a sudden, I found myself right above a large gray cat stretched out on the close-cut, dry Bermuda grass. The cat had no idea I was there. I took a closer look and saw something I had never seen before and have never seen since. Sitting up between the cat's two front paws was a mouse. I was actually close enough to see its face and the insane brightness of its eyes as it stared up into the face of that cat in hopeless terror. I was absolutely transfixed. I didn't move a muscle for 5 minutes, wondering why the mouse didn't just go ahead and make a desperate break for it. Before I understood the hideous game that was going on, I saw the cat raise its paws so that the mouse was free. It couldn't believe it for a while. And finally, the mouse took a step or two backward, away from the paws, very slowly and cautiously. And when the cat didn't move, the mouse took three or four more steps, still carefully, but with an almost visible tremor of hope. And still the cat sat motionless like an effigy in stone. I could almost feel the mouse's decision to run for it. And then it did. And instantly, the cat exploded into action and caught it with its paws and pinned it. As soon as it became clear to the cat that the mouse knew the situation was hopeless again and was hypnotized by fear, the cat slowly lifted her paws and allowed the mouse to sit up once again and stare into her face. I broke out in goosebumps at the realization that this cat was literally mocking the meat it was going to feed on when the game was over. I saw that scene repeated in exactly the same way three more times before the cat got tired of the sport and on the last lunge opened her jaws and ground the mouse up alive. I sat there thinking how I had seen Shakespeare's poetry come to life in a backyard in Oklahoma. Cats traditionally have green eyes. And jealousy, Shakespeare's character Iago says, is the green-eyed monster, the cat that plays with and mocks the thing it is going to destroy. I have no idea whether that comparison was popular before Shakespeare put it on paper, but obviously people had noticed that jealousy can do the same thing with us before it eats us up alive. When Paul said that Christian love, agape love, is not jealous, he clearly had in mind a love superior to what we manage most of the time, because jealousy is such a common sickness. Once in a while, there is a rare exception, just to prove to us that one of our number now and then can rise above the typical selfish reaction. I read a true story some years ago that told how in 1950, a man by the name of Carl Taylor wrote his wife from Okinawa, where he was working, that he was no longer married to her, that he had gotten a quickie divorce somehow to marry a 19-year-old girl who was expecting his child. In the next few years, he and his new wife had two children. But one day, a few years after the divorce, his ex-wife, Edith, who lived in New England, learned that he was dying of cancer. She wrote a letter of comfort to him. And after his death, she invited Aiko, his Japanese wife, to come with her two children to live with her in Massachusetts. They did come, and it worked out beautifully. For the life I loved and lost, Edith said, I have been granted three others to love, and I am thankful. It must have been that kind of spirit that Paul had in mind when he said, love is patient and kind. Love is not jealous. I don't know whether Edith ever went to church a day in her life, but it was her kind of love Paul was describing. I'm not there yet. Are you?